All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Another week. This is week two of the Tour de France. Me and Tyler are gonna go through, run down, through the stages, things we lot, saw, noticed, our feelings, our thoughts. So yeah, hope you guys are enjoying the podcast and loving everything we're kind of putting out there. And it seems like, everyone is. So yeah, appreciate all the love.
Yeah, trying to find the first day, which was I think stage 10 of week two.
Yeah,
So that was the pancake flat day.
well, and that also, I mean, because we did our last podcast on the first rest day, and the big worry, and still even was the worry that, with the COVID tests, and we saw basically the race director of the race go home. Like, that was pretty funny. I mean, not funny, but like, it was just pretty crazy, the race director. I mean, it's pretty
It
amazing too
was,
that none
but
of the riders
no
tested positive.
riders. Yeah, which was cool. And it was
That
like
is.
five teams with one staff member each, so it wasn't actually bad at all. And
No, that was.
they even adjusted the rules to where if you there was a rule before where if you had gone, you had two staff members during the whole tour go positive, then your whole team went home. And then they changed it back to where it was only 1 week. Within 1 week, so you'd have to have your team have two positive tests per testing cycle. And luckily now we're even through the second rest day,
And
and
again,
there was zero positive
it's
tests.
that's
So that's
blowing my
good.
mind. Here's a
That's
sport
good.
everyone was
It's good
really
news.
concerned about. Like, I mean, this was a, I feel like this was a pretty big priority sport where COVID is, you would think it had just been spread like a wildfire. And honestly, yeah, there's been less spectators on the course, but there's still been spectators. I mean, you
There's still
saw,
been a fair amount,
yeah, on some of those final climbs before they started kind of closing them down. There was still a fair amount, and I mean, yeah, they're wearing masks and everything, but pretty incredible that no riders. So whatever they're doing, that's pretty big props to, I guess, the medical side for keeping riders safe and allowing them to keep racing their bikes. I mean,
Yeah, for sure.
that gives hope for races here, I feel like.
Yeah, no, it's an encouraging sign, I think, altogether that we had, that it shows it can be done if you just are diligent about being clean. So I think that's kind of like the lesson there is just be diligent and aware. But anyway,
Let's
yeah.
get back to the race now.
Stage
Anyways,
stage
really
10
cool.
was Sam Bennett won over Ewan and Sagan and Viviani and Pedersen. And then this one day was a little windy, but it was pretty much like normal bunch sprint. I don't think it was too exciting outside of, yeah, I mean, you had, I think Sagan was starting to look better there.
Dude,
He
this
was
to me,
coming
this
around.
week has been. I mean, yeah, there's been, I mean, it's honestly been really, I think, amazing with the green jersey battle.
Sure.
I mean, Sam Bennett, like, here's a competition. I feel like that during these years have definitely kind of been turned off just because everyone, Sagan's just been so dominant.
Yeah, he's just
And
unbeatable.
I think everyone was honestly kind of expecting the same thing at the start of this tour. I mean, maybe a little bit hesitation, but it's been pretty impressive seeing Sam Bennett rise to the occasion instead of just kind of be like, yeah, I'm just going to keep
Right.
targeting
Just hunt
stages.
for
And
stages, sure.
yeah, because that's what I felt like a lot of sprinters did end up just kind of like
Well, that's like
giving up.
that's Caleb Ewan's kind of path, right? Because that's what he does, but
Which is kind of surprising too, though, because I mean, me and you remember racing against Caleb, and dude, that
he was such
guy,
a good climber, man.
dude,
It's interesting, yeah, because
that's
that's
what they
true.
need to realize. The listeners out there, they think these sprinters are big diesels and like basically anyone can beat him up climbs. No, man. Caleb was, when he was U23, he was one of their last kind of guys sometimes at like Avenir working for Rob Power and Jack Haig. And so no, he's no slouch. So it's definitely when you see him being dropped in the tour and like
I think that he's definitely changed his training. I don't think he climbs as good as he did when he was U23. I'd be pretty shocked if he did.
really.
Yeah, I have a feeling that that's the case. I could be totally wrong, but that's my hunch because, like, man, didn't he beat Kamna in Recioto when he won that?
Yeah.
Like he was legit climber. Like he was. And the
these races he won as U23 were serious uphill.
Yeah, they were hard
races. I mean, yeah, I mean he won a lot of sprints and crazy sprints and, but he was a guy that was doing it all back then, and it was always very discouraging when you would call yourself a climber and you'd look over and Caleb is the one that's on the front. You.
Yeah.
Basically like a lot of what we saw with WOW this week, man. So,
yeah. Yeah. So then Sage 11 was the controversial one, right? So this was the stage that UN won over Bennett and Van Aert, but Sagan was relegated. He was originally second.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to talk about with that.
Dude, like, let's, I mean, this is the bread and butter right here. I feel like,
yeah,
that was all right. You go ahead. You're a sprinter. Let's see your point of view.
I'm not a sprinter like that. Well, I'm not a sprinter, but I,
you're that fat, flatlander guy, you know,
that fat flatlander. Yeah, sorry, that's me.
Words.
No, it's all good, man. yeah, man. It was for sure dangerous. I think that it wasn't. I don't think he should have gotten relegated. That's like just the bottom line of it. I think that he made himself room. Like you saw camera angles later of like him dodging selfie sticks as he's sprinting, like and the barrier jutting out. Like there wasn't really much risk for a crash. Like there was risk for a crash, but I don't think there was more risk than like any other standard sprint move. I think that the crash from Jakobsen, like, definitely made it people more wary of things like moves like that. And so I just feel like Sagan gets the short end of the stick with a lot of those things, man. I just think that.
Oh, man.
I just think he's so big and strong. And it's similar to like basketball, where like, you know, like LeBron never gets a foul because he's just so big or strong, or Shaq or somebody like that. I think Sagan is similar because 100% he was totally in control that entire time. Mind you, still sprinting probably 1,500 watts at, you know, 75K an hour. And he made himself room, but he didn't there was zero malice in it. If Jakobsen had done that same thing in Tour of Poland, he would have stayed up, I think. And I just think that was a move that it looked so extreme. Because, I mean, it was so impressive. Like, he just, like, literally just, like, made himself a lane. And Wout left enough room there for him to do it. And, I don't know, man. I just totally disagreed that he should have been relegated. Like, I thought it was super disappointing.
That was
the best he'd
more.
Also I... looked the whole race. Like, that was the best sprint he's done.
I mean, it just showed. Yeah, you definitely saw. I mean, maybe he heard our podcast, dude.
Oh, man, dude. Everyone I've talked to said on the podcast so far, they've all freaking crumbled.
Dude.
Bad news for our podcast last week.
But anyway, I mean, I couldn't agree more with. I mean, it was just ridiculous seeing this. It's like looking at someone driving a Formula One car and an average person. Or, like, someone being like, oh, my – like, I don't know, just freaking out about the speeds and the way they corner there and take things. It's like they're professionals. They can do things, especially Peter, that people in their wildest dreams can even think that you could do on a bike.
Right.
I'm dead serious. Like, you see – like, and he said, like, even in the interview, like, oh, I didn't even see the selfie stick or the barrier. Like, when you're in that zone, you completely turn off every – like, you're just there.
I mean,
it's such a zen moment that he's so professional, knows exactly what he's doing. He's going to pull it off, and he's just going to get through that gap. And, like, you saw, like, any normal person or even, like, anyone else, honestly, besides maybe those top five sprinters there, couldn't handle that.
There's not many people who could do that, absolutely.
And you saw, like,
which is why it looks so
control.
Crazy.
When they slowed it down, you could see the tires going around the barrier, like, subconsciously he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Like, they know what they're doing. They're comfortable. And I think it was like a little unfair of like Wout to kind of like freak out. Because I'm not saying it's sprinting, but like that is like,
no,
that's high end world tour sprinting. Like, if we're going to keep softening it down, it's eventually going to be cat 1-2 A flight, B flight sprints, you know? And it's like, people need to realize like, these guys, they're not going to make moves that are, like, most of the time going to risk the Peloton for crashing. Those guys usually that are making those moves right there can handle it and are really, really put in, like,
well, I think especially those two guys that were involved. Dude, I mean, I don't blame Wout for being upset. Like, it's heat of the moment. I think Sagan said the same thing. Yeah, that, like,
yeah,
all good. Testosterone, you know, whatever.
You're ramped up, man. I get it.
It's 200. Like, you know, yeah. Like, I totally understand that. I mean, I'm sure that damn, it looked like a nudge, but I'm sure it felt like a tackle.
Oh, my gosh. You know? Like, yeah, at that speed. That, again, is just...
He's a Sagan strong guy. Like, so,
and it was so disappointing. Like, here's someone that, like, he was going to have a hard battle anyway this year. It was looking like they were, you know, people could kind of sniff out that there was a little chink in the armor, I felt like, or a little bit less of, like, motivation to go after it. And I think we saw on that stage, that's where he was like, no, this is mine. Like,
I just don't,
I'm going to push through no matter what. And this is my jersey. And
yeah,
ever since then, I mean, I knew as soon as they, like, made that, like, regulate that rule against him and put him at the back of the field and took away those massive points, massive amount. I knew that this week was just going to be unreal. I mean, and we saw, like, just,
I mean, I honestly thought, and I wouldn't have blamed him for just dropping out. I would have said, dude, go to the Giro, you know, like,
I mean,
right, have it, like, we all know who deserved it, and, like, I mean, not that Sam Bennett doesn't deserve it, but I just thought, you know, like, Sagan, like, you're about to say, I know what you're about to say, which is, you know, we always do this, we have to, like, tear down the stars of the sport.
Always, every time. There's not one star people have slowly started picking away at Froome over the years. Everyone, like, every star we have, there's not one that we want to keep up there.
And I think there's, it's undoubted, like, without a doubt, like, he is not what he was. He doesn't have the same level. You see in the sprints, he doesn't.
But his reputation, I mean, what he's done in the sport and what he's created and who he's inspired and the people he's inspired. I mean, it's, dude, he's
as boring
the way
as it
cycling.
May be, it's still better for Sagan to win the green jersey.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I mean, so it's going to be, it would be interesting for him to just pack it up and go home. Like, get on him for not doing that. But I wouldn't have blamed him if he did.
Yeah. No, he definitely, I feel like, he's a rider too who's just like, I mean, he's, everyone would make, you know, give him a lot of, you know,
grief.
Heck, you know, grief about, you know, being super maybe cocky when he was younger or arrogant, but he was just able to do things and able to do things nobody else could do. But you see a lot now, like, he's doing these interviews, he's pretty confused.
Nah, he,
you
just
know,
he's
just like, I mean, but he's just like, what more, what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? You guys, anything I do, you guys are against me, you know? It's pretty frustrating because, again, it's just, I wish, honestly, I kind of wish riders would have even, I don't know. I feel like there needs to be more, you know, community within the Peloton where, I mean, I'm sure a lot of other riders didn't agree with that. Like, and it's just.
I mean, Sagan, if you watch any sprints that he does, he bullies his way wherever he wants. So I'm sure he doesn't have that many friends when it comes down to that, because there's been so many guys that have had that happen, which is why,
like,
you look at every single sprint, Sagan is in the best position. Like, he's always like,
oh,
you need to be third wheel, he's third wheel. You need to be second wheel, he's second
wheel. Like,
he just moves in there. He just, like, sorry. So it was a standard Sagan move. I disagreed that he should have been relegated, but c'est la vie.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely made the cards for the green competition extremely possible for Sam Bennett and Matteo Trentin. You know, it definitely was finally like, okay, there's a pretty big chink now in the armor. Let's keep this up, because he's motivated, man, and he's killing it. And
yeah,
it's been fun seeing him and his team work so hard for that jersey. You know, definitely a lot more love and respect for it.
So, moving on, stage 12 was already Sagan going back and getting some big points, but Mark Hirschi won over Pierre Rolland and Soren Krogh Andersen. And I mean, I don't know, Hirschi is just really strong. It was well deserved. I think everyone was pretty stoked to see him win, because he was so good on, like, the previous stages. I mean, the one thing that I noticed outside of Hirschi, who's like, was so impressive, is Alaphilippe does not have it, man. He doesn't have it.
No. When he tried,
I'm gonna jinx him now, and he's gonna win this week. But I don't think he has it, man. He got that one stage in Nice, which was super impressive, but over Hershey even. But you can just see it now, like after. You know, he did that Perry Sword move. He got dropped by. He should not have been dropped by, you know, this group on this day. And he was.
Nah.
He should have been one of the favorites for the victory, but didn't have it.
I mean, it definitely was looking kind of desperate the way he was going at, like, after it. Like, kind of just like. Like you said, yeah, he didn't have it. And he wasn't going to pull back Hershey the way he was trying to. You know, He was trying to do it all himself. He was trying to be, you know, the guy that could just bridge across. And that's what won Hershey the stage, was just such, I mean, yeah, he's so incredibly strong, but how much Alaphilippe disrupted the chase.
Yeah.
Like, so much, you know? So, pretty, yeah, I agree, Alaphilippe. It looks kind of, like, right now, I don't know whether he's just going to kind of now chill in the pellet. Like, I mean, yeah, he's already won a stage. The Tour de France had the yellow. Definitely all boxes checked off for a successful tour. So, I mean, I could even just see him, you know, basically being like, all right, if a tour presents its, he gets himself in another break or whatever, try it again. But I feel like more it's just now kind of training for the World Championships, which a week later.
I mean, we already saw today's Tuesday, so stage, whatever stage happened today. You know, he was there again, and he just didn't have the legs. He tried.
No.
He knew the move to follow, and he followed it and then was gone after that. So, so next stage was stage 13. This was that first, like, kind of, wasn't even mountain finish. It was like a hill finish, but it was a steep hill. Danny Martinez won over Kamna and Schalkman. And then, Roglic and Pogačar kind of ripped up everyone. And this was the end of Ekenbernal, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that's the day, that's the day he lost his first 40 seconds.
Yeah. He lost, 40 seconds. And again, like I said, I don't know if I said last week that I thought Landa was good, but Landa still looks good to me.
Yeah, last week there's a lot. I mean, we didn't think that, Richie Porte was going to look as good as he did.
And I know. I ripped on Richie Porte, and he's proving me wrong, man. I ripped on him real hard.
Yeah, we definitely, and honestly, when you've been watching the commentary and everyone has been shocked and surprised with, all right, but good he's for fine. Him. Yeah, dude, to have just a baby and to be so close to the podium, he's definitely then used that motivation in the right direction. And a lot of people, it's super easy to get distracted and, to kind of just chill. And he has found another gear that's just so impressive, man.
Yeah, good for him. But now you obviously saw, Roglic and Pogačar just, kind of dominate everyone. Then you had Porte and Landa in the background.
Dude, but how about Pogačar? Close. He's just so much, I feel like, Roglic can stay with him, but not for, he's putting in seconds every time he does those little moves, and it seriously is so disappointing that he lost so much time that first week, and that minute, because I think he would be in yellow, man.
Well, we'll see. It's only 40 seconds, so, now, currently. Yeah. And he was good this stage. Away. Nairo also lost time this day. This was, I think, pre-Nairo crashing too, I believe. Or maybe he did crash.
No, he crashed. Yeah, he crashed.
Okay, he crashed at this stage. So he lost 21 seconds. Iran actually lost some time this day. And then he kind of bounced back too. Iran finished with Bernal. But kind of I think the next kind of talking point is Bernal. And because the following stage, or not the following stage, I guess, two stages later, we saw him lose big time. And I think that, to me, he said, after that stage, he's I'm doing my best numbers and I'm getting dropped.
That's what I wanted to get to was,
and
that's
I think that that's crazy. Something that you can probably relate to, been kind of, on that level and then still been doing good numbers or great numbers and just, all of a sudden not having the performance there. And I think that, to me, that seemed like he was mentally defeated more than he was physically defeated.
Definitely talk. I mean, that's something I feel like, I mean, any rider's going to feel something like that when they've been out training super hard or did the same prep as they did the year before and had success. And, you know, you get to the next year and next thing you know, instead of being up there or winning it, you're now 20th, you know, and you maybe did even a little bit better power and numbers. And I mean, I remember at Tour of California, actually when the day Egan Bernal won on, I think, Gibraltar, like it was, that was the hardest I've ever gone in my life. That was my best 20 minute, like, power number of that final climb. And that was in the middle of the stage race and, like, you know, at the end of a race too. And I wasn't even close to him. Like, here I did 370, and which I was just dying. And they're, you know, I remember just catching Boswell, and I mean, it's crazy. And that just, you really, it really does hit you hard. Cause I remember then the next day was the time trial, and the time trial, I again did my best hour time trial, like on the flat. I had done 350 and I was ended up 50th, you know? And, but that's like that, you know, it really, you know, you're like, what am I doing?
Whereas it would have appeared that you do that same performance like 2 years prior and you would have been winning or close to.
Exactly. And right. So it's just getting, these teams are finding new ways to just get more competitive and train harder. And I don't know, maybe I have no idea what's going on, but it's crazy watching Ineos, Grenadier just struggle when they've had this recipe for success for,
I mean, and they wouldn't have sent Thomas and all those guys like to different races had they not believed in the numbers that Bernal was doing or he was capable of.
That's what I think is just, I mean, Bernal's, you know, doing these numbers that are higher than he's done and sitting and he's, you know, struggling on the wheel. And you know that early on, like. And that's the other thing. You start trying to convince yourself and telling the media, like, I'm doing the best numbers. I'm doing, like, there's nothing, you know, and that's truly, like, you can see he saw, you know, him shaking his head on, was it the Queen stage?
Yeah,
and
we'll get to that one.
Yeah, soon. It's just, I think, you know, it's definitely, it's so difficult when you're, that's why I had this really love-hate relationship with the power meter because, yeah, it was great to build and get stronger and see your power data, but it definitely was.
But it doesn't mean you're going to win.
It was this little mental virus that, honestly, when you were in the race and you were doing higher than what you were, like, you thought the numbers that you were going to do were going to put you up there. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, you're then just kind of like underwater. And honestly, I can't even imagine being so young as him and being already a winner of the Tour de France and going to Colombia and being this just like superstar. And I'm sure he's no, you know, he didn't slack off. He never seemed like that type of person. And so he just must be, you know, he probably trained so hard and, you know, and so it's just, it's crazy to, it's definitely going to be a mental battle.
I mean, for sure he was prepared, right? Like, again, like you saw, I think like the difference between him and Garrett Thomas was Garrett Thomas wasn't prepared coming out of quarantine. He admitted as much that he just didn't, you know, have the same like level of preparation.
Honestly, you don't with no racing. And let's see, there was like a month of racing before the tour, like with no racing prior, you don't know like how the level you are on, you know, the months leading up, and that really helps your mental as well. If you beat, you know, Roglic at these other smaller races, or, you know, those that, as you've seen with Sky, this is, I think that's their downfall, because every year you've seen them put their top GC riders in kind of that same program.
Well, no, he was there though. He did the same races. Bernal did, he just got beat. He got beat at Tour de Lens. Yeah. He got beat it. Yeah. He won like a smaller like 2.1 like right as they started racing in France.
There's no racing though was so short. There's no time to reevaluate your plan. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like,
because he got beat by Roglic at Tour de Lens, and he got beat at he got beat at the Dauphiné. And he just got beat. He was just getting beat all the way through.
But like I said, there's at that time there's no, you're really just hoping something then flips around at the Tour. Right.
And because, I honestly thought that was going to happen because, I mean, we saw last year, like he came on in the last week and I thought that same thing was going to happen, but I was wrong. He just didn't have it, which you just don't have it sometimes. So that's all good. Oh,
totally. Yeah.
So stage 14, Søren Krogh Andersen soloed. That was a good stage because that was the day that like Bora really like committed to just making it super hard.
I love it.
I thought the end of that stage was super exciting because it was like kind of it reminded me of like a Ardenny kind of just like super punchy, twisty turn kind of finish and really aggressive. Again, you saw Alaphilippe you saw all of Sunweb just light it up. It was like Benoit, Hirschi, Alaphilippe threw an attack there. Sagan was like right there, like he was there the whole time. But I think that he just had to. Everyone was kind of looking at him, and he had to like cover some big attacks. Like I believe he covered Alaphilippe, and then Hirschi went over the top, and he was the one that had to bring back Hirschi, and you could just see it zapped him for the finish. Anyway, there was nothing you could do because just Sunweb had more guys, and they just played the tactics right. They just kept throwing haymakers with one guy, like dead fresh.
That was a typical Kermesse win. I felt
it was really nice. I mean, it was like perfect. Watching, they did it really well.
Watching those, I mean, those guys, they know how to do that. I mean, they've done. I feel like those are the type of style we'd always see in those Kermesses where you'd be up there with those Belgium, yeah, where it's sending each rider like attacking, and yeah, super impressive by Sunweb. They've been
really good. Yeah,
Not expect that at all. I mean, I saw with Hirschi, I was like, all right, he had a good first few days, and then you saw him kind of chill, and I thought that was kind of going to be their Tour. But holy smokes, they've been in almost every break and really actually being the only ones fighting. I think that they've won three stages so far? Four stages?
Two or three now. Hirschi and Krogh Andersen.
Okay.
Yeah, wait, just two. Yeah.
They've
been honestly there every stage.
Super big Craig. I mean, with them being also the youngest team. I mean, right. That's crazy. A lot of them are 22, 23. Like, Hirschi's only 22 years old, right, racing the Tour de France and winning his first stage. Yeah. That just shows the young, remarkable talent that's coming up in the ranks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a good stage. It was exciting. They just nailed the tactic and they were unselfish and won. And Sagan looked good. I just think, and he didn't look good in the finish, but I think that it wasn't because he didn't have legs. It was because he had to use them to chase down Hirschi.
Yeah.
And then that got countered by Søren Krogh Andersen, and that was it. So that was a good stage though. I thought Sagan looked really good to me again.
Yeah.
And I was like, actually after that stage, I was like, well, you know what? Maybe he'll be able to come back, but I don't know. I think it's gonna be tough just because the race is kind of like loaded in the rear with so much climbing that I just don't think there's gonna be that many points even available, and I don't think Sagan's going well enough uphill to be able to get a lot of points.
Yeah, I just think it's, yeah, I mean, it's, he's them regulating him, that's what I feel like. I don't think he's gonna be able to come back. I think Sam Bennett, or honestly I think Matteo Trentin, could really, really be turning. He's kind of been really chipping and been really good at getting in. He's been in a lot of those breaks, man. And because we saw today's stage, but he's already passed Sagan.
After today's stage, stage 16, I'm looking right now. Sam Bennett has 269. Sagan's on 224, and Trentin's on 212. So it's close.
It's close.
Best thing Bora can do would be light it up early on. If there's like a big, huge mountain stage, light it up early and try and put Sam Bennett on the time cut.
Well, I mean, I felt like that's what they are. Like,
that's gonna be the move,
like,
right?
That's gonna be it. Like, that's gonna be their last. Like, I feel like that's their only kind of move, I mean, at this point.
Yeah.
Cause he's not gonna beat him in the hole, but he's not gonna beat him in the sprints. Sam Bennett's way too fast now.
No. But he has to at least make sure he's not there for the intermediates. But I feel like the best option is if you can catch him on a stage where, you know, catch him on a bad day and you put him out the back and you ride full gas nuts and try and make sure he doesn't get time cut. But or he makes sure he doesn't
riding make someone out of the race.
I've had to do that before in Tour of Korea with Jakub Marečko, who was like dominating the Asian Tour races. He would win every sprint. And with Cycling Academy, 1 year we couldn't beat him. We knew he was too fast. But there was, you know, Tour of Korea always has like a couple like good hilly parts in the middle of each stage. And there was one day where we got him off the back, and I noticed, and I was just like, you know what, like, let's go. And we rode like 100K full gas and put him out of the race. So, and then we won. So it worked. But
tactics. I mean, that truly shows, like, for everyone who does, you know, thinks it's just about riding hard, and it's just, yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't really think there's a lot of tactics, but
yeah,
I mean, for Peter Sagan, that's how he's been so clever. I mean, and honestly, I think that's could be very well the move, which would just be so crazy.
That's what I would try to do. And I mean, Sam Bennett, he's not going to go off that easy, right? Like, he's a really strong rider. But that's your one, I think, one opportunity. And maybe you do it with CCC to, but I don't think CCC has legs either. They don't have the team. But
no.
Anyway, so last stage of last week was the big mountain stage on the
Grand stage.
Grand Colombier. And yeah, man, I don't know. It was good. There were some things that happened on this stage too. First off, like, Wout just X'd out everyone.
Oh my. Dude.
Wout was unreal.
That was, I mean, he pulled
10K.
The climb started, at like 17K to go. And yeah, 10Ks, man. Like, that's uphill. And that climb was steep, man. Like, really, really steep. So for him to do that, and I mean, yeah, it was just, he just continues to, I think, impress. And I think he's unreal, man. Like, there's big talents and but he's just doing something else I haven't seen.
I think, I mean, Sunweb just looked, or not Sunweb, Jumbo looked just, this was the day they looked so strong. I mean,
they had a full team the whole day.
Wout did such a big turn. They still had George Bennett, who I honestly think Wout's climbing better than. And then, you know, they had Tom Dumoulin and Sepp. And to me, Sepp could have won this stage, I think. Because when Port went, like, Roglic and Pogačar, like, followed in the end. But Sepp, like, zipped back up to them, kind of, like, checked on Roglic, made sure he was okay, and then kind of, like, pulled over. And I don't know. I think he had the legs to win. I think he honestly could have won.
I thought that's one. Well, I thought, no, wasn't it that stage where Sepp pulled, like, is getting ready.
No, Sepp
I
felt pulled. The pull.
And, well, he was, no, he was, he didn't even pull. He was getting ready to, but Roglic had already attacked. He did. Roglic was the one that,
it's
like,
possible, yeah.
Looked
yeah,
like you he's right. the one who pushed
and then Port
it.
Went over the top.
Port then, went over the top, and then Sepp kind of looked like he was just, like,
following.
There. And then, he. I mean,
I thought he was going to win.
He was easily in the next group because he ended up sixth on that stage.
Yeah, it was so impressive.
Fifth or sixth?
Sixth.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But, and that was just from him sitting on.
Yeah.
Like, and then he even kind of, like, he didn't even really contest the sprint at the line. Like, he's just, I mean, we know the guy. He's just such a chill guy. And, you know, he's not one of those that I feel like, you know, but I definitely felt like it was weird. Like, I felt like
he just looked so
he didn't
zippy,
get his
though.
Chance.
No,
he didn't get his chance.
Because like when Port went over the top and then he was like kind of gapped off, Sepp was, and then he, but you like saw him like kind of like just pop straight back up to the front, like kind of look over at Roglic, like make sure he was okay. Then he's like, all right, now I'm not going to like drop you, I guess. It looked to me like he's just like, oh, I'm not going to drop you.
To me, that was a panic move. That was a panic move by Roglic.
Yeah, I mean, he was second, right?
Yeah, but when he attacked, it was just like,
I just think he didn't have as much as he thought.
He could have waited, let Sepp do his thing, and wait, you know. But all of a sudden, he attacked, and then he was just like, "Oh, you know." And Pogačar, you see, Pogačar every time is one of the last to go.
He's clever.
He's smart. He's very, very smart and smart with knowing. And I mean, you see it, like, he doesn't go from those long shots, and he just always has that bounce to go around. So I thought it was definitely bizarre. And okay, so yeah, that's also the stage where big GC shakeup with well, not big, but like Bernal losing how many 7 minutes that day. Tyler, oh, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm back. We had a little disconnection, but we're all good.
Anyways, I was saying, We saw a big, like, pretty, a little bit of shakeup at the GC with Bernal.
Yeah, Bernal losing. And Quintana both lost big time. Quintana obviously had crashed, so not, like, huge surprise. Bernal was that. One thing I picked up on was Movistar looked way better this day, and, like,
Valverde
was coming back, man. I think Valverde would be my pick for Worlds right now. I think he's just getting better. I don't think he trained that hard during quarantine. I think he's getting better. I mean, the dude's 40, and like he's already he's into 12th on GC. He's into 12th on GC. He does this every tour, man. He's never gonna win it, but he just kind of like is consistent and is just like he gets.
He'll probably be 8.
Yeah, man, and it's just like, but then he's gonna be great for Worlds, I think. And then, yeah, I mean, Gil Martin also lost time.
But that was, man, this guy's just had bad luck. A lot of bad luck. That was that right at the bottom of the climb. Yeah. For him to have,
but he ripped back through. It was impressive.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the sad thing is watching that. You know, he's going to get up there, and that's just going to be it. That's going to be it, is limiting his losses. And then,
the last thing that I noticed from this stage that was, I just thought was like, it was pretty savage was, I don't know if you paid attention, but Wout van Aert, when he finished his pool, went and sat on the back of Bernal all the way to the top of the climb.
No way.
Yeah. He finished in Bernal's group and just sat on Bernal's wheel all the way to the top.
Oh my gosh. So he dropped him, dude.
Finished his pool, and went back and just sat on
him. Stomped on his face.
Like, oh man, that is disrespect.
That is, what a savage. Disrespect. I mean,
it's just like,
put your place, twist the knife, put yourself in Bernal's position, man. Here you have someone who's,
not supposed to be dropping him.
Yeah, much heavier than you. And you're also just like, this guy, I won the tour the year before. And then he stomps on you to drop you. And then rides with you to the finish and just sits on your wheel.
And like Bennett finished
mentally, that's
a minute down from them. So like George Bennett would have like done his pull after Wout and then dropped, and then gone straight out the back. But Wout decided I'm just going to sit there right with Bernal and make sure he knows who dropped him. Which I thought
Definitely a pretty mental move. Power move. Like that's definitely going to be in it. I mean, I felt like you definitely saw that. I mean, he just, the light went out. And because it's kind of, it's interesting. Like, it went out, man. I mean, sometimes you think like, okay, lost 40 seconds the day before or whatever. Maybe he'll, if he loses, fights again, may lose another 40 seconds or whatever. And maybe still could be like fifth or something in the tour, but it as soon as it went out, like as soon as he got dropped, and for climbers, I feel like that's kind of honestly the most, dangerous part is that mental.
Yeah.
Because as soon as that goes out,
it's done,
and you get dropped. Like you've seen, like with Gil Martin, Harada on Cofidis. Like if you fight back, like if you ride your tempo in the races and on the climbs, you fight back. You can come back, and you will definitely like. I realize, I would always do that a lot of times at Tour of Utah as well. Like, you'd realize, all right, these guys can't hold this pace. A lot of these guys can't hold this pace forever. So there's at least like 5 or 6 of these guys are going to explode and
come back.
So if I just roll this tempo, you're going to be fine. Past those guys. And I mean, it went out, man. And I mean, he had all his team around him. And I mean, I can't imagine, man. Winner of the tour the year before. Have the number one on your back, and then Wout does that.
Yeah,
dude, that is
savage.
Oh my god! So, I didn't see that. That's insane.
Cool, man. So I have a prediction for this week. I think there is a stage where the green jersey circumstance could come down to what I said, and it's stage 18. They do. It looks like the Cormier de Rosalon like pretty early on. The sprint point is at kilometer 13. And the Cormier de Rosalon starts at kilometer 25. It's a 175K stage. And it's Cormier de Rosalon, a Cat 3, a Cat 2, a Cat 1, a Cat 1, and then an unclassified climb to the finish. If they put him out the back on the Cormier de Rosalon, Sam Bennett, and they ride all the way to the finish, they could catch him. And Sagan just has to survive better, And he doesn't even need to be in the front group, but he just needs to survive and make sure that they I mean, they have the guys. They could put Bukman and those guys, make them ride all the way. If they could get him to the La Roche-sur-Foron, which is like the HC climb, and if they can get to there and then the GC battle starts, you know, then, you know, you could see some dudes get time cut on that stage. And to me, that's the move to get Sagan into the green. It's just take Sam Bennett out of the race, because he's going to lose that sprint at kilometer 13.
Yeah.
He's going to lose it. So he might as well go for it. Tomorrow's obviously a big stage. They do the Madeline and they call the Lolos.
So we've had our experience on the Madeline.
Yeah. So that's going to be, I mean, that's like the, I think the outside of the, well, there's two hard stages, honestly. 17 and 18 are really hard. And then obviously the TT on stage 20 is going to be GC day. So, yeah.
That, and I mean, so yeah, we talked trash on Richie last week, but that with TT's how he's looking form. And with that TT dude, oof. I think he's in, I mean, this is exciting with
the podium battle. Like, is gonna be
you
good.
You got Rigo, you got Pojakar and Rajalik fighting for first and second. You got then Rigo, you got all these other guys really fighting for the podium, which, oh, I mean, that reminds me that let's go back to the Roman Bardet crash, man, because Roman Bardet was fourth overall and he was just killing. I mean, he was a snake in the night, quiet. Nobody knew he was there and just,
yeah, I mean,
he was doing a great job.
I think he would have just gone lit up though anyways, but yeah, sad crash.
No, so, I mean, that was crazy. I mean, he looked like he just, I mean, had just gone off like doing shots all night when he got up from that. I mean, way bad concussion, and then gets back in the race and yeah, finishes. So, I mean, that was pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. And definitely crazy to see him out of the battle, but, no, that, I mean, just seeing that is pretty wild with concussions and, yeah. And you've had your experience with some concussions, right?
I have. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't in condition to get back on my bike when I've had my bad ones. So, pretty.
Yeah. I mean,
actually, credit to him though. He got back on his bike and like only lost like 3 minutes that day on the uphill finish. Like, pretty impressive. Pretty.
I mean,
ridiculous.
But what? I mean, what? I mean, there's probably a lot of people out there being like, "Oh, they should have took him out of the race." What? Like, what can the teams do or everyone in that race situation? Because,
well, I mean, there was a camera. That for yeah, sure. There was a dude, the guy like got on his feet and then just like stumbled back to the ground. So I think it was one of those things where it was like the Tour de France and like, oh, he was probably like, no, I got it. And then like, they're like, well, it's the Tour de France. So like, he got it. And they was like,
that's also scary for the other riders, man. I mean, he gets in there and
he ended up having a small brain hemorrhage, actually.
See, I mean, dude.
So it wasn't like it was no joke. It was serious. It was a serious issue.
I mean, that's what I mean. Yeah, I don't know.
The sport is still a bit archaic. That's just kind of the bottom line.
I my wife was watching it and everything, and she like just every time she sees the crash is just shocked that people get back up because I mean, anytime anyone gets like a paper cut, people now like are complaining. But I mean, dude, these guys, it's just in your mind. Like I can't it's you don't even think about. Ever since we were juniors, you know, you crash and you just always think about finishing the race. Or is my equipment okay? Like, oh, is equipment okay? All right, let's get back in the race. Like, I'm losing time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just crazy thought. And, I mean, yeah, super crazy. So definitely hope he's all good. And but, yeah. But I think, yeah, Richie's looking super good for the podium. And I definitely feel bad for not talking great about him last week. So mad props to Richie.
Yeah. Sick, man. Well, that's it.
Yeah. That's kind of our update this week. Week number two of the Tour de France. It's been super fun. Me and Tyler have loved doing these episodes and these podcasts. I feel like a lot of our guys who we've talked to have had a lot of success recently, man. We had Blevins was just fourth
in that race that he was talking about. So now he's going to.
Yeah. That kind of warm up race. Yeah. Keegan was also sixth or eighth in that race.
Yeah.
So super cool
point for Specialized.
All right, we'll see. But yeah, no, so super cool. Everyone's been enjoying the episodes and it's super awesome. So thanks everyone. Me and Tyler have loved getting on and doing this. Really fun to catch up every so often with him and talk about racing. And so yeah, send us your comments, send us what you guys think, maybe a future guest like we always say. And yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
All right, well, have a good week, and we'll talk next Monday.
Awesome.
Ciao. Bye.